Feeling bogged down by your daily grind? Not living up to your greatest potential? Then it's time to turn up the heat and get real with what truly matters, be it family, career, wellness, spirituality, or anything else that fuels your inner flame. Join Fire It Up with CJ as this respected life coach talks to a wide range of experts and everyday people for their inspiring and unconventional ideas to help you make the most from your life. Equal parts heartwarmer, cheerleader, and butt kicker, CJ Liu draws on her extensive experience in business and life coaching, along with her intuition and playful humor, to address meaningful topics with truth and irreverence. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. Now, here's your host, CJ.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Fired Up with CJ show. I am CJ Liu, and today we have Dr. Lonnie Leary coming all the way from Hawaii, our second person from Hawaii. She is the author of No One Has to Die Alone, and she is going to be in this segment offering her incredible story of how she developed her work as a specialist in working with the chronically ill, dying, and bereft clients. So welcome, Dr. Leary.
Thank you so much, CJ. I'm glad to be here.
So I wanted you to share the incredible story and how you started on your path of this field of study.
Well, the path kind of started me. It probably began when I was 13 and my mother died unexpectedly. And in my family, as we were growing up, we did not talk about her illness. And we certainly didn't talk about dying or death. And so at 13, when she died, I was not prepared. I didn't have the skills. I did not have the language to participate in her dying. And I felt when she died that I had left her, I had abandoned her, and that she died believing that her only daughter didn't love her enough to help.
Oh.
And so when she died, I was left with incredible remorse and guilt on top of my grief. And it really exacerbated a long, long process that I carried a lot of pain with. I was trying to find meaning. And in my family, the response to a death was to not talk about the person who died. And so it felt as though here today, gone tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
For a child without language or models, we are self-centered, and we try to develop meaning, and we make ourselves the center of the universe. And so I grew up falsely believing that my mother had died because of me, because I had not known that I loved her. And I was really alone with that for years and years. But I remember clearly the day shortly after her death that I said to myself, this will not be a tragedy. I will find meaning in this. I will make something good out of this in order to cope. That's how I tried to cope. And so I really spent the rest of my life learning, going to school, and taking every opportunity that I could to learn from the dying so that I could address my greatest fear, which was being there, being present, being able and willing to help any other loved one who was dying. I never again wanted to feel helpless, useless, and powerless. And so I did take myself back to school and earned graduate degrees in thanatology, which is the study of death and dying. And I worked in hospices and hospitals with the dying and the bereaved. And I learned what I needed. And then I also, in the midst of this, when I was 29 years old, had an accidental overdose in a dentist chair of nitrous oxide. And I had the classic near-death experience that has been researched and documented by millions and millions of people. And what I learned in that experience really taught me how to be with the dying, because it totally erased any fear that I have of dying. And so I could lean into the experience of dying and be with people without any fear, and even without talking to dying patients. I don't necessarily share that experience with them, but they pick up on it. They know that I know something because I don't have that anxiety and the fear. So I use that, and several years ago, it all came full circle because my father did indeed call me. I was living on the East Coast, and he called to tell me very matter-of-factly that they had found that it wasn't pneumonia that he was suffering from. In fact, it was end-stage lung cancer. Mm. And because I knew what to do, I was ready emotionally and with the skills. I closed my private practice. I closed my university classes where I was teaching death studies. And I flew home to be with him, thinking that because it was stage four, we might have 3 to 6 months together. I moved into his home, and I was his caregiver. And we did it right. It was his final gift to me, and really healed all of that grief that I'd carried for years. His gift to me to allow me to be with him, to be his closest, most intimate advocate and supporter. And it was my final gift to him to be present so that I could help him right up to the last moment of his life. It was the greatest gift of my life and really the greatest privilege.
Your mom is smiling, I'm sure, during that whole time, smiling down at you.
Not only, yes. Grateful for what I could do in her stead, but also I'm sure happy for the healing that I experienced.
And we can all do that.
We can all do what I did. There's nothing extraordinary in it. But we do need to reduce our anxieties and our fear about death and dying.
What are the fears? Because part of what you said is your near-death experience helped you kind of erase all the fears. What are the fears that people typically go through?
Well, I think the fears are connected to the myths that we have in our culture, and other cultures have some of them and their own. But our culture is so youth-oriented that our myths and fears about dying are based on our belief that dying is the end of consciousness. And I know that not to be true. Another myth that we have is that dying is a failure. And I know that not to be true. Dying is universal. Death is universal. We are all going to die. There's nothing about a failure. However, I continue to hear snips about, you know, somebody didn't exercise enough, or somebody smoked, and so their death is their fault. Well, we all can participate and are responsible for our choices, but we're all going to die, and none of us are going to get out of this. And in fact, there isn't, you know, a formula for immortality. So the fear and the myth that dying is a failure, that dying is the end of consciousness. Another fear and myth that we have is that dying is the end of a relationship. And I know that not to be true. When I and millions of others had that near-death experience, my mother was right there on the other side. And in fact, it was almost as though she caught me. And what I knew in our encounter is that I did not need to tell her the details of my life. She knew it all. And she had always been with me.
Right, she'd been relating to you.
Yeah.
Even when you felt like, oh, she was gone.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so part of it is when you're actually with people who are in that state of, you know, their state where they're transitioning, how is it that you lean into it and talk to them about these things? Is instead of saying, you know, even though given that they have these myths, mm-hmm. how do you talk to them about it?
Well, I think the first way I start, CJ, is that I don't talk to them about it. I posture it. So my body language speaks a lot. And first of all, I am close to them.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't stand at the doorway. I don't keep distance between us. I'm right there at the bedside and sometimes on the bed holding them. And that's the second piece. My body posture, I touch them. And touch communicates so much. when I touch a person who is dying, I'm communicating to them, first of all, I am here, I am here, I am here. You will not be abandoned. You will not be alone. You will not be isolated. The second thing that my touch communicates is that you are not decayed. You are not decrepit. You are not unacceptable. You are not ugly. And that's one of the fears that the dying have. The third is that it's okay. I'm okay. You're okay. We're in this together. So the first thing I do is the way I am. And the second thing that we can all do is the way that I listen. So I listen to everything. And I will listen to them over and over and over again, the same story as they are trying to find meaning about their life and even trying to articulate what their legacy might be, why they were in the world, and what of them they will leave behind. And when I talk with them, I'm not talking at them, and it's not about my agenda. It's about them and what they value and what they want to share. So I come in to the experience without an agenda, without expectations. And I want to let me tell you what I mean by that. I think oftentimes we have expectations of the way a person is supposed to die.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we each get to die our own unique ways. And one of the things that I tried to do with my father and I tried to teach is that when I'm working with the dying, I want to help them to identify their values, and then I am there to support those values and choices.
Okay, let's actually I'd love to talk about that after the break. Unfortunately, we have to go to break, and then that's exactly the topic I want to follow up with you. So many thanks to you, Dr. Lonnie Leary, the author of the book, No One Has to Die Alone. And in the next segment, we'll be talking about the conversations that you can have with someone who is in their transition stages of life. Seattle folks, make sure to go to the eastwestbookshop.com and sign up for Lonnie's workshop, which is happening tonight between 7 and 8:30. So tonight, May 24th at 7 to 8:30. And if you want to create a happy you and a happy planet, then friend us on Facebook at the Fired Up with CJ page. You get all sorts of great show information and upcoming shows. We'll be right back.